This is Neil Boggs inviting you to Meet the Press.
Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air and winner of every major award in its field, is a public affairs presentation of NBC News.
Our guest today on Meet the Press is the politically powerful Speaker of the California State Assembly, Jess M. Unruh. Mr. Unruh is the outgoing president of the National Conference of State Legislative Leaders, which held its annual conference in Washington this week. One of the leaders of the California Democratic Party, Mr. Unruh managed John F. Kennedy's Southern California campaign in 1960 and was chairman of the executive committee of Governor Brown's recent campaign. He has lectured on politics and state legislatures at Yale's, Rutgers, and other universities. We'll have the first questions now from Lawrence E. Spivak, permanent member of the Meet the Press panel.
Mr. Speaker, as I'm sure you know, many people in California and out of California blame you for Governor Brown's defeat. Where do you place the blame?
I place the blame on 8 years of an administration, which even though it had been a good administration, it's very difficult to reign over a state growing at the rate that California grows, and eventually you run out of steam.
Well, now, according to report, you took a vacation for part of the time during the campaign and went off on a lecture tour for part of the time and didn't get back until a week just before the campaign. Don't you think you might have been able to do more to help him win?
Well, I'd like to flatter myself and think that I could have delivered a million extra votes, but I think that would be quite egotistical, and I'm not prepared to say that. I did not take a vacation. I was asked to go to the Caribbean for the Institute for American Universities and then urged to go by the State Department to report on some things for them.
Mr. Speaker, California for many years has had governors who have been described as progressives and as liberals. What do you think is going to happen to the state now under a conservative, or as some people say, ultra-conservative governor?
I'm inclined to think that California makes the governors more than the governors making California. And a couple of previous Republican governors have said to me in private conversations that it's impossible to be a conservative and govern California. And I think at least one of them started out as a conservative. He became quite liberal. I suggest the same thing is quite likely to happen to Governor-elect Reagan.
You're saying then that he's not going to govern the state as a conservative or as an ultra-conservative? Do you say he's going to become a progressive or a moderate?
I'm saying that I think it's almost impossible to govern a state to growing at the rate of over 500,000 people a year, as California is, to meet the problems of education, transportation, and all those things, and still drastically slash taxes and act like a conservative.
Well, what sort of a governor do you think he's going to make then?
Well, I don't think I can pass judgment this early on the governor-elect at this point, but I do suggest that he will not be able to govern the state very long as an ultra-conservative.
Mr. Speaker, there are some political observers of California who say that you will not allow anything to happen in the legislature that would enhance Reagan's position and reputation. How do you answer that charge?
Well, I'm much more concerned with not only allowing but causing things to happen in the legislature and in California to answer the problems of the people than I am in determining whether it's going to help or harm Mr. Reagan's future political possibilities.
One more question before I give up questioning on this round. According to report, Reagan's victory left the state, the Democratic Party in the state, in a shambles. Is the Democratic Party in a wreck?
Well, I think the Democratic Party is in difficulty in the state of California, but it has always had a great deal of difficulties. We're not a monolithic party. No one has enough going for him, or ever will in the foreseeable future, to deliver the Democratic Party the Democratic vote. It requires a great deal of effort, a great deal of unity, a great deal of movement in the same direction by a number of Democratic leaders in order to produce a victory.
Thank you, Mr. Unruh. The other members of our panel today are Robert Novak of the Chicago Sun-Times, David Kraslow of the Los Angeles Times, and Nancy Dickerson of NBC News. We'll continue the questions now with Mr. Novak.
Mr. Speaker, apart from the fact that your presence or lack of it could obviously not make the difference in 1 million votes in California, isn't the fact that you were absent much of the campaign an indication that you did not approve of Governor Brown running for a third term?
I think not. I will have to say quite candidly that I did not feel from the beginning that the governor should seek re-election. I told the governor that in private conversations, and it was my evaluation that he could not win. But when he did win and won the primary, I immediately endorsed him. I did everything that I was asked to do with the governor's campaign. I made every appearance that I was asked to make. I did everything that I could, and I think the results quite obviously indicate that it was beyond me.
Well, do you think they could have asked you more to do than you were asked?
I think that's quite possible, but I'm not about to second-guess the campaign. It's over with, and I'd like to look at the future.
Do you think that a candidate not so intimately connected with the Brown administration could have beaten Mr. Reagan?
I think it would have been very difficult in view of what happened nationally, and to be quite candid about it, I think it might have been possible to run closer and not have lost as many seats as we did in the legislature and in Congress.
Another notable absentee from the California campaign was President Johnson. Do you think he made a mistake in not going to California to campaign and other major population states as well?
I think the president did exactly what he should have done, and that is to take care of his health. Apparently, that was the reason he did not come, in addition to caring for our foreign affairs, which certainly take precedence over partisan campaigning.
Is there a dissatisfaction in California among the Democratic leaders that he did not come?
I think there is a general feeling of unrest among Democratic leaders in California and perhaps throughout the rest of the nation that the president has been so busy taking care of the Vietnam situation particularly that there has not been as much of an emphasis on the Democratic Party politics, the Democratic National Committee, among other things, as perhaps some of us think there should be.
Will he have trouble putting together an organization in California if he runs in 68?
Well, I think I indicated before that everyone has trouble putting together any kind of an organization in California, and that certainly goes from top to bottom.
Mr. Kraslow.
Mr. Speaker, I'm told you are the author of the phrase, money is the mother's milk of politics. Being an expert on the subject, what do you think of the presidential campaign financing law enacted somewhat hastily by Congress in the last days of the session?
Well, I have, I did author that phrase, and let me say I've worn it like an albatross around my neck ever since then. I never said that I agreed with it, but that happens to be the fact of the matter, and anyone who is at all honest will tell you that the same thing. They may not tell you as publicly as I did, but it is a fact of the situation. I do not know what Mr. Reagan and Governor Brown spent in the campaign, but I would imagine between the two of them it was easily in excess of $7 or $8 million. I think we must find a new way of financing campaigns. I certainly favor the concept of government financing at least part of the campaigns. I favor shorter campaigns in addition to that, but I've not yet been able to resolve all of the problems. As for the federal law, I think it certainly is a step in trying to do something about that, and I would like to see it utilized at least for a while.
But what happens when you put that kind of a campaign fund on top of the system you already have without touching the system? Is the system as it presently constituted in need of reform?
I think it is, very drastically so.
Well, what happens then when you put this new fund on top of that? Will that in any way restrict any kind of campaign fundraising efforts that you have now?
I would think that that fund, if it works out well, ought to pretty much remove the presidency from the necessity of the kind of ding-a-ling financing that we've had in the past. It seems to me like there's enough money potentially in that fund to run the presidential campaign without having to go through the mishmash that we go of president clubs and expensive fundraising dinners and private supplications, and that perhaps this would add a great deal of dignity to the president's.
You estimated campaign. The other day that Governor-elect Reagan spent about $5 million to win this race, and that Governor Brown perhaps spent 60 to 80% of that amount. How much of that will be reported?
I think California reporting laws, which are relatively lax, generally wind up with about half of the campaign money being reported. The rest comes in the way of services, donations that never get reported.
Mrs. Dickerson.
Speaker Unruh, to follow up Mr. Novak's question, do you think any Democrat could have beat Ronald Reagan in California?
I think it would have been very, very difficult.
Do you think you could have?
I have to say, in all modesty, that I doubt that I could have.
A lot of people think you want to run for governor, do you?
Well, I will say that I think any politician who has been elected to any office in California is flattered at the idea of running for governor, and unless he is being completely dishonest with you, harbors some hope that someday the people of California might ask him to lead that greatest of all states.
Mr. Speaker, there's been a Harris poll that was put out today, and I think one reason you're important now is that because, after all, you're the top Democrat in the biggest state in the union, and you may have a lot to say about the candidates 2 years hence. This Harris poll this morning said that Governor Romney could outpoll President Johnson. Do you think he could in California?
I think that it's quite unlikely that he would, and certainly I believe by the time the campaign comes, when President Johnson, if he chooses to run again, has had time to campaign, I think it's quite unlikely that any Republican could defeat him.
How about Ronald Reagan? Could he defeat him in California?
Well, I would just think that would be a premature, that is a premature question and a premature answer, anything I might say. I think the governor will have his hands full trying to run California and not to, should not worry about the other 49 states.
Well, if you were making the choice now, if you had to, there has been a lot of thought that Senator Robert Kennedy is more popular than President Johnson, particularly in California. And after all, as a leading Democrat in your state, how would you make this kind of a choice if you had to now?
Well, I'll wait and see whether I have to make it, first of all. And secondly, I am a friend of Senator Kennedy's. I have a great deal of respect for him, as I had for his brother and have also for his other brother. But as a friend, I have to accept his statement at face value that he is not a candidate in 1968 and is supporting President Johnson and Vice President Humphrey.
How would former Vice President Nixon do in California now?
I think not much better than he has done in the past.
Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Speaker, as you know, there have been reports that a coalition of Democrats and Republicans are going to try to keep the speakership from you in this next session of your legislature. Do you expect to fight for the speakership?
I do not. I expect to be reelected without opposition.
Now, you've long been one of the leaders of the Democratic Party and I believe played a key role in a number of national campaigns. Why do you think the Democratic Party took such a bad beating clear across the nation?
Well, I believe that society moves forward not in a constant movement, but rather lurches. We strain against the barriers that hold us back until we finally break that barrier. And then we take a huge lurch forward, a giant step forward. And I think that's what's happened in the past few years under the Kennedy administration and the Johnson administration. Every time you do this, there is an almost equal reaction. I think that reaction has begun to set in now, the feeling that we have moved gigantically to solve many of our basic problems, and that now there is a period of waiting to see, of developing the issues more specifically, and that's what was expressed at the polls.
You think you're going to keep on lurching through 1968?
Well, I would think that we have now a great opportunity in many of the programs which have been started by the Johnson administration to help many of our people throughout the nation. At this point, we need to consolidate those programs, to work upon the details, to make sure that they are moving in the right direction, and then perhaps to strengthen our other units of government, which I strongly believe in, particularly at the state level, so that those governments can compete meaningfully for solutions to the people's problems.
They tell me that there are few people who know the state of California as well as you do. What do you think Reagan's problems are going to be? What are his major problems in this next legislature?
Well, the big problem, of course, is the financial problem of meeting the tremendous growth problems that California has. We have over 200,000 new students entering our elementary and secondary schools every September, and just keeping abreast of those is a tremendous problem. There is a necessity, I think, to reform our tax structure, and I started this 2 years ago with a massive tax overhaul, most of which, I think, incidentally now, Governor-elect Reagan has adopted as his proposals, and most of which I think will be enacted at the next session of the legislature, to shift away from the tremendous burden that property tax payers in California presently bear over towards some fairer tax with more ability to pay, such as the sales tax and or the income tax.
Now, Governor-elect Reagan promised to try to cut the cost of state government, making possible eventual tax reductions. How much luck do you think he's going to have in cutting the cost of state government?
I think he ought to have an opportunity to do this. I expect to cooperate with him just as fully as I possibly can. I have to say that it will be a very pleasant surprise to me if he's able to have a very massive effect on state spending.
Well, now, you've been there in the state for some time. Do you think that the state is carelessly or laxly and expensively run? Do you think you're going to be able to make many significant cuts?
As I said before, I'm certainly willing to wait and see if the governor-elect can do this, and will be pleasantly surprised if he can.
But you yourself have said, I think, on a number of occasions that the legislature ought to originate programs and ought to have more to do with legislation, so you ought to know something about it. I'd like to know what you think. Do you think that you, if you had the power, could cut California state government now, or do you think you're going to have to spend even more?
I think with the growth problems that the prospect of a cut in total spending at the state level is very, very minute.
You think you're going to be able to get by spending as much as you have in the past, or do you think you're going to have to spend even more?
Well, I believe that when you have 500,000 new people coming into the state each year, that the prospects of spending more are much more likely than the prospects of spending less.
Mr. Novak.
Mr. Speaker, if you believe we are now in a period of consolidation, do you also believe that in California there should be a moratorium on civil rights activity and civil rights legislation?
I think there is a necessity to reevaluate what we have been doing in the field of civil rights to see if some of the punitive measures which we have moved with in the past are in effect doing the job, are in effect dispersing the ghettos. I personally feel that they have not done that, and that there is a necessity to see if we can't find a more dramatic, a more impactful way of doing it.
Well, that doesn't quite answer the question. Do you think that there should be a stoppage, a ceasefire on the civil rights front in California, where there's been a great deal of violence and turbulence?
I think insofar as punitive legislation in the field of civil rights, that there will be a stoppage, regardless of what I may feel about it. I think the people clearly indicated this in the last two elections in California. Now, I do not think that means we can stop in the field, in the general field of civil rights. I think many of the programs which we have started, Head Start, particularly in the field of education, there is a necessity to continue them, perhaps even a necessity to accelerate them. But insofar as punitive legislation in the field of housing and in other fields, that there is very little likelihood that there will be much progress there in the near future.
By punitive legislation, do you mean the Rumford Open Housing Act? That is, as Speaker, if you were re-elected Speaker, will you push for the repeal of the Rumford Act?
I have not yet made up my mind on that.
Isn't your party policy against repeal of the Rumford Act?
I think that's the last statement we made in our party platform.
Do you approve of that?
I voted for the Rumford Act when it was first enacted.
But do you approve of retention of the Rumford Act at this time?
I think I answered that I have not yet made up my mind on whether that act has been effective in what we originally wanted it to do, and that is to achieve more integration. Until I'm able to determine whether it has been or not, I cannot.
You have no opinion whether it's effective at this time?
I have grave doubts that it has been.
Mr. Kreslow.
Mr. Speaker, on the basis of Mayor Yorty's failure to endorse Governor Brown this year and his endorsement of Mr. Nixon in 1960, do you consider the mayor a loyal Democrat deserving of party support?
Well, I think that question probably answers itself. However, I must say in all candor that that party support does not mean very much in California. If it does, Senator Kuchel is dead.
How do you mean?
Well, he has not supported the last two Republican nominees for statewide office, even with an endorsement. Now, I personally do not think he's dead. I don't know. But party support is of very little value in California generally.
Where would you be in a race for the Senate, say, in 68, a primary race between Mayor Yorty and Alan Cranston?
I think that's a premature question at this point. And it may very well be that we may have a candidate for the Senate that no one at this point is even thinking about.
Do you have any standards at all by which you would measure the fidelity of a politician to his party?
Well, I think that party certainly is secondary to principle. And I'm not too much concerned about party, slogans, or even classical ideology. If a man is dedicated to progressive solutions to the problems that the people have, I think that's much more important than parties or slogans.
Do you think that you, in good conscience, as a top official of the California Democratic Party, could support Mayor Yorty in any political campaign?
Well, I'm not really a top official of the Democratic Party. I'm Speaker of the Assembly, and as such, I expect to run an assembly that will be made up of both Republicans and Democrats. I hold no party office, and I do not propose to nominate myself as a party savior.
That doesn't answer the question. Do you think you could support, in good conscience, Mayor Yorty in any political campaign?
I think I have supported other Democrats who have not always supported other Democrats.
Mrs. Dickerson.
Mr. Speaker, at the press club speech you made this past week, you left the impression, in the minds of some at least, that you think Ronald Reagan will make a pretty good governor. You said he might be a ceremonial governor. Do you think he really can run the government by being a ceremonial governor?
Well, I think that is about what has happened at many levels of government today. The government has gotten so big, so complicated, so complex, that most of the time it is the professionals, the appointive officials of an administration that are doing the running of the government anyhow. The government, in many respects, becomes a ceremonial figure. Now, he does, in some occasions, exert a good deal of influence. And when you get a John Kennedy who is both able to act as a ceremonial leader, and have an impact on the government as well. That's very fortunate, but that happens very rarely, I think.
Well, how can you take a man who doesn't have a great deal of experience in government, like Mr. Reagan, and say he's going to do a good job? Because he has to know what the job is all about before he can appoint people to do it well.
Well, the people made that determination, not me, at the last election. But I do think that it's possible in government, like everywhere else today, to hire top-notch professional people who do know what the job is all about. And a governor who is smart enough to do this and have confidence in those people can get by whether he himself knows very much about it or not. I think all you have to do to affirm this is to look across the breadth of this nation and understand that out of 50 governors, we probably have 25 or 30 of them who have very little concept of what government is all about.
Have you talked to Mr. Ronald Reagan about, since the election, about any plans you two might have for working together?
No, I have not, but I did talk to him very briefly on the telephone after the election to offer my congratulations and hope that we could work together to solve the problems of the people of California.
Do you think you're going to initiate legislation over and above the governor's wishes, that is, his philosophy as opposed to yours?
Well, we have over the past few years done, I think, an outstanding job in California in equipping the California legislature to offer alternatives and to properly screen in depth a governor's proposals. I propose that we will do that again this year, but I do not want to initiate that until I see what the governor himself is proposing. I think as a new governor coming in with a huge majority, he is entitled to a fair shake. He's entitled to a fair hearing before we originate our own programs or before we start opposing his. And that's what I propose to do.
We have 2 minutes to go. Mr. Spivak.
Mr. Reagan, during the campaign, Governor-elect Reagan was critical of the amount of money California was spending for welfare. Do you think that you can cut your welfare expenditures in California?
Not very much in the ultimate. I think that there may be some alternative methods of handling this.
You think he's going to have a hard time, then, cutting welfare funds?
I said before, I think it'll be very interesting to see if he can cut spending significantly anywhere.
Now, during the campaign, Mr. Reagan also indicated that he would appoint John McCone, former CIA chief, to investigate Berkeley. Are you in favor of another investigation of Berkeley?
Well, I presently am chairman of a joint legislative committee on higher education, which has plans in the making now to fully conduct a full-scale investigation of all of California higher education, not just with a view toward Berkeley. I would suggest that perhaps the way out of this dilemma, after having talked to some of the Republican leaders, is for the governor, as soon as he can, to appoint Mr. McCone to the Board of Regents and allow him to conduct whatever investigation he might wish to as a member of the Board of Regents.
If the governor wants to investigate Berkeley, is there anything the legislature can do to stop him?
No, there is not. We can, of course, deny him an appropriation. Beyond that, he's on his own.
We have about 45 seconds, Mr. Novak.
Speaker Unruh, at your convention this week, Congressman Melvin Laird, a power in the Republican Party in Congress, proposed a tax-sharing proposal whereby the states would share income tax with the federal government. Do you agree with Congressman Laird on this?
I favor that concept, but I think it ought to be done by the federal government abandoning a portion of the income tax field, because I think the states ought to have the thrill of the responsibility of enacting the tax program as well as sharing the revenue.
Do you think there's any chance for that happening?
Not in the near future.
And with that, our time is up. Thank you, Mr. Unruh, for being with us today on Meet the Press. I'll tell you about next week's guest after this message.
For a printed copy of today's interview, send 10 cents in coin and a stamped, self-addressed envelope to Merkle Press, Box 2111, Washington, D.C., 20013.
Next week on Meet the Press, our guest will be Dr. Walter W. Heller, former chairman of the President's Council of Economic Advisors. Now, this is Neil Boggs saying goodbye for Mr. Jess Unruh and Meet the Press.
Here's the Swingin' Six to tell you how to get your holiday mail delivered on time.
Shopping, baby, baby,
Christmas rush is here again,
with families gathering for the happy day.
But tons of mail won't bring good cheer
if postmen can't get home this year.
They'll be working Christmas Day,
unless you plan the easy way.
By shopping early, mailing early, use a handy zip code every day.
Shopping and mailing and use a handy zip code zip every code. Day.
Shopping early, mailing.
Shopping and mailing,
the
handy zip code
great.
send your postman home for Christmas.
Hello. I'm Henry Morgan, just sitting down to host another session of Monitor, where you'll hear one actor say this about another actor.
Danny Kaye is one of the best cooks in the world. He's absolutely staggering. And to watch him cook is a very beautiful experience, just to watch him at work. It's like a beautiful dance, in a sense, the way his hands are going, and he's deeply, deeply involved in cooking.
That's Roddy McDowell talking about his friend Danny Kaye. Then we'll be hearing from comedian-turned-playwright Woody Allen, who is now so confident that he says,
I'm a big panicker. I try a joke one night, and if it doesn't get a good laugh, I'll usually never say it again.
All this, plus sports features and a lot of nice music. So join us, won't you, for Sunday Evening Monitor.
Join us each Sunday for news in the making, as the nation's top reporters put challenging questions to world leaders on Meet the Press, America's press conference of the air.
This is Merrill Muller. Barbara Walters, Bill Cullen, and I come your way each weekday with Emphasis on NBC Radio.